provide value to others. And then what's going to happen is they're going to want to be around you because you're providing value. They're going to get to know you. They're going to get to like you. They're going to get to trust you. And they're going to want to do business with you. They're going to want to invest with you. Always start with creating value first, not taking.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
What's going on, everyone? I'm Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Money Podcast. Welcome back to another Multifamily Monday episode. On today, it's going to be part one of a three-part series. I've had a few people reach out on this one after we had the three-part series on how to increase your deal flow, how to find deals in 2022. Everyone seemed to really like that. I got some really good feedback on that three-part series, but kind of the natural progression after that is, all right, I have the deals, but how do I fund these deals? I had several people ask me, can you do a series or an episode on how to raise private money? So here it is. Probably not as quickly after that one as you'd like, but finally got some time to sit down and bang these three episodes out. So the first one, part one, on how to raise private money, part one, and that's from friends and family. To me, there's kind of three strategic or three major groups, overarching groups that you raise private money from. The first, which we're going to talk about today, is friends and family, essentially just your network, right? So at first, it's friends, family, and then anyone in your network, whether that be your network from if you have a full-time job, so from work, colleagues, maybe it's some extracurricular groups you belong to. That's a network, obviously. Maybe from back when you went to school, that's a network. Friends from home, any type of activity or group thing you do, that network, you tend to want to look first, right? Those places where you already have solid connections with people, where it's an easier conversation to start on. And honestly, I know a lot of people will be, hey, like maybe my friends and family don't have money. But even if that's the case, it's a great way to practice your pitch. But before I jump into it, the two other kind of major groups that I believe you should focus on raising money from, the second one is what I call strategic partners. So these are other people that are in the business that raise private money. They already have their network, a list of investors that they can blast opportunities off to, deals off to. So you want to create strategic partnerships with them. And once they get to know, like, and trust you, then you can start showing them your deals and they maybe will be able to raise money for your deals. And you can get a, depending on the size of their investor list, you might get a few of them to come in on your deals to help fund the whole thing or a portion of it. And the third one is more of an institutional partnership. So that would be private equity, family office, and maybe more of like an institutional fund. And if you're not familiar with any of those terms, I will break those down once we get to that part. But to me, those are kind of the three major groups where you can raise money from. So again, it's your network, friends and family, two, strategic partnerships from other people that can raise money for you, and then three, more of an institutional play, private equity, family offices, institutional funds. But today, we're going to talk all things friends, family, and your network, and how to go about that, how to raise money from them. So let's just jump right into it. So when I started off, that's where I went to first, right? Obviously, friends, family, and then the other part of my network I first went to is finance, my career in finance, right? There's a lot of people in that sphere of influence that already invest in investments, right? Because, you know, they're in finance, they're familiar with these type of private placements, maybe not specifically in real estate. That was kind of a struggle for me that I didn't really think I'd have, is the education part on real estate, because from my background, everyone's used to investing in stocks, bonds, ETFs, mutual funds, et cetera, right? Traditional investments, not alternatives. So that was kind of a bigger speed bump than I thought it would be. Trying to educate them on that and why it's such a great investment. I try not to take it from the angle of it's a better investment, right? Because we were brought up in that industry thinking one way, right? Terrible way to sell anything is to essentially say like your way of thinking is wrong, right? So I tried to not go about it that way and more of like, this is a great alternative, a great way to diversify, blah, blah, blah. So what I did, that's how I focused at the beginning and then also with friends and family. And like I mentioned earlier, yes, not everyone is going to be fortunate enough to be able to raise money from friends and family. But like I mentioned earlier, it's a great way to practice your pitch, no matter what, whether you can raise money from them or not, start with them because it's a great way to practice. And if you mess up, they're more forgiving than someone else that you're not as close to in your network or someone new, right? So that's where I would start. And also they'll probably give you some solid feedback too. They won't be as, for the most part, they won't be as hesitant to give you feedback as maybe someone you're just meeting or someone you don't have deep as relationship with would give you feedback. So that's where I started. And that's where I think most people should start. And depending on what you want to do, size of deal, if you want to go right to 100 plus units, or if you want to start more on the small to mid size, if you do start there, you could actually potentially raise your entire raise from your friends and family, right? Now, if you go to 100 plus, depending on who your friends and family are, you're probably going to need more than that to raise an entire raise for 100 plus unit apartment complex. And that's what I focus on. So that's kind of where I'm going to take the rest of this conversation. I'm not really going to focus on the smaller deals, but a lot of what I'm going to say pertains to that, right? All right. So how to start growing your, you know, immediate network in the sense of letting them know what you do. Because you always want to be talking about what you do. So if anything ever comes up, you're top of mind when that subject comes up, right? So one thing that I've, and I didn't create this, I've heard this from someone, I don't even remember who it was, but I've tried to incorporate this a lot in my life, is that anytime someone says, hey, how are you? Instead of being like, I'm doing good, how are you? Just, you want to be like, hey, I'm great. I'm looking for 100 unit apartment complex, blah, blah, blah. Or, hey, I'm doing great. We're raised, we have to be careful of this from a legal standpoint, but like, hey, I'm doing great. I buy large multifamily apartment complexes that provide my investors with consistent cash flow and a strong back-end return or an alternative to the stock market. How are you? And like, at first, that's going to feel really awkward, right? And of course it will, because that's not normal, but you're going to set yourself apart. And those that actually are interested in that, they're going to be like, wait, what do you do again? And then you're going to be able to get into more of a conversation. Don't just say, hey, I'm doing good. How are you? Let them know what you're doing and let everyone know what you're doing all the time. So it really gets ingrained into people's minds. And so I just touched on like the regulatory aspect. And I feel like we should jump into that before I go further, because this is a huge part of raising money. And I probably should have started this at the very beginning of this episode, but we'll get into it now. So you can't just go out there and raise money without any rules and guidelines, right? I think most people know that. But for those that don't, a private placement is regulated under the Securities and Exchange Commission, or the SEC, because it is considered a security. Because what designates from a security is you have both an active party and a passive party. And generally, there's more than one on the passive side, and there can be more on the active side too, but that's generally what classifies it as a security. So I'm actively finding and managing the property, and X investor is passively investing. All they're doing is giving my money. So the Securities Act of 1933 wanted to put oversight on that. They wanted to oversee that so they could catch any predators, any bad apples out there that would take advantage of it. And there still are people that do that, but that's why this is in place. And so under the Securities Act of 1933, any offer to sell securities must either be registered with the SEC or meet certain qualifications to be exempt from such registration. Now, there's different types of exemptions from this. There's Regulation A, Regulation D, Regulation CF. But today, we're just going to focus on Regulation D because that's what most syndicators use. That's what we use. And what Regulation D is, there's specifically two type of exemptions to registration under Reg D, and that's 506B and 506C. Now, some of you probably have heard me talk about this before. If so, fast forward ahead. But for those of you that don't, this is really important. 506B is probably the most common way to register for an exemption. And what that is that means you can accept both accredited investors. So what an accredited investor is, anyone that has made $200,000 in the last 2 years with a reasonable expectation to make that in the current year. Or if you're filing jointly, that number goes up to $300,000 a year, or you have a net worth of at least $1 million. That excludes, that does not include your primary residence in that net worth number. Now, there's been some talk that they might move those numbers up, but that's what they are currently. And so under the 506B, you can accept as many accredited investors as you want, but you can only accept 35 non-accredited investors, or as they call them, sophisticated investors. So these are people that don't meet either the income requirement or the net worth requirement, but you've taken enough steps to verify that they are sophisticated, that this is an investment that fits them, fits their finances, their investment objective. And there's no really clear way to do that because the SEC likes to keep things very gray. They don't like to make things black and white and really give clear steps on how to do things, except there was this group that was raising money and they took a three-step approach. They wrote a letter to the SEC asking, hey, like this is how we do things to develop a pre-existing substantial relationship, and that's what you need to create when it comes to a 506B. And so they sent this letter and the SEC responded, yeah, that would meet what is needed to create a pre-existing substantial relationship. So since that letter, and I don't know off the top of my head, but since that letter came out, that's how everyone kind of operates now. All syndicators kind of operate that are doing 506Bs. So it's kind of a three-touch rule, and that's like a vague way to put it. But essentially, you had enough communication to develop some type of relationship / understanding of their financial objectives and situation. And so generally what you see is like there's some email correspondence, there's a call, maybe a Zoom call or phone call, and there's at least like three touches there, right? You've been able to build that relationship. And this pre-existing substantial relationship has to exist before you have a deal. So if I currently have a deal that I have under contract and I'm raising for, and I meet Bob tomorrow, and over the next few days or week, we have built something that's considered a pre-existing substantial relationship, I cannot show him this deal because that relationship was developed after I had this deal under contract. However, if during this week I created that pre-existing substantial relationship with Bob, and then I got a deal the following week under contract, then I could show it to him. So that's what makes it tough with the 506B, but it allows you to both offer your deals to both credit and non-credit investors. Now the 506C, that's an offering that you can only accept credit investors, but you can market it. So you don't have to worry about that pre-existing substantial relationship. You can go talk about it on social media, at any type of meetup. The 506B, you cannot go market it in any way. You only can show it to those people as pre-existing relationships. But with the 506C, whereas the 506B, they can just check off that they're accredited or non-accredited, and you don't have to prove that. Whereas in the 506C, you do. And you have to use, you know, certain agencies and software that's approved by FINRA and the SEC that essentially proves that they are accredited or not. And that's a lot of paperwork or a lot of forms to fill out. And sometimes that can be a little annoying. But then again, if they really want to invest, do it. So those are kind of, just to let you know, those are some things you need to be aware of when you're raising money so you don't get in trouble. It's very important. And again, I'm not a syndication attorney, so please talk to your syndication attorney. I'm just relaying what I've learned. Again, I do not have all the answers when it comes to syndication law. And something new that's kind of happened recently is you can actually start off with a 506B offering, right? So I can raise from all my non-accredited investors. Once I have brought them all into this deal, then I can switch to a 506C. On the day I switch to a 506C, from that day forward, I can no longer bring in non-accredited investors. I only can bring in accredited. That allows you to bring in your non-accredited investors so they can still get in on a deal. And then it allows you to then, after that, market. So that's pretty cool. But all right, let's get into why you're really here, like how to raise, right? So I mentioned always talking about what you do. Don't just say, yeah, I'm good. How are you? Like, it's what do you do? And what are you looking for? And then it goes to joining meetups, going to different investment groups, and going frequent and consistently, getting your name out there. There's also networking groups you can go to, referral groups. And again, just to get your name out there, go to your REAs, your Real Estate Investment Association meetings. And this is just to get your name out there, what you do, what you're looking for. And that's a great way to build your personal network from the start, right? And as you start gaining traction and maybe some experience, then you can look at maybe starting a podcast like this, right? So you can come from a place of authority and you're creating value, because this whole thing is about really how really good capital raisers do it is they create value first. They don't start off asking, you know, it's not a take, take, take. It's a give first, right? The whole giver's gain, the law of reciprocity, provide value to others And then what's going to happen is they're going to want to be around you because you're providing value. They're going to get to know you. They're going to get to like you. They're going to get to trust you. And they're going to want to do business with you. They're going to want to invest with you. Always start with creating value first and not taking. Again, guys, this business is not a get rich quick thing. It's a get extremely freaking rich over a long period of time. And that's what this is. It's cultivating your network. As I always say, your network is your net worth. And it takes time to build this stuff. It's taken me a long time and I'm still not where I want to be. I still want my investor list to be larger, my network to be larger. I want to be able to give back, provide more value to even more people. But it takes time. And so you really have to focus on it. Join as many groups, many masterminds as you can, just to get your name out there and what you do. And again, come from a place of adding value. And now I'm just throwing a lot of terms out there and I'm being very general. So like Sean, but what do I actually need to do? All right, I'm going to break down how I did it. So first, and you don't have to do it this way. A lot of people might say this is not the right way, but you may start just raising a small amount from friends and family, take down smaller deals. And I think that's a great way. Start that way, build up your track record that way, and then go into big deals. So how I did it, I start off, I invested my own money into smaller deals and created a track record that way, all along knowing I wanted to go into the bigger stuff. I come from an institutional side. I know the benefits of the bigger deals. There's just so many reasons that I could take up a whole episode. I actually did record an episode. If you want to go back and listen to it, if you haven't, it's episode 15, why I love multifamily real estate. I get into why I love one multifamily and real estate from a base level, but then why I love the bigger deals. So I could take up again, a whole other episode. So go back and listen to that. But the point is, I knew I wanted to get into the bigger deals and I knew I wouldn't be able to fund a deal just by doing that, right? Just by going to network groups, friends and family. Like I said, it'd take a long time. I knew it would take a long time and it has, but I knew there was another way to fast track it a little bit, right? And don't get me wrong, I still go to meetup groups. I still go to networking groups, referral groups. I still do all of that. Obviously the podcast, masterminds, I still do all of that. And I'll continue to do all of that. But I knew I needed to add another sleeve to it to increase the reach. And so then I can do more deals and bigger deals. And so what that was is creating a platform to send people, right? So it's great if I meet them, right? Whether it's in person or virtually or through a podcast, a mastermind, a meetup, whatever it happens to be. That's cool if I meet them, right? Give them my old school business card, whatever, cell phone, email, whatever it happens to be. But are they going to reach out? And even if I do follow up, which everything's in the follow-ups, you better be following up, you're mean people. But even if I do follow up and it's not like a systematic follow-up, I'm just going to get lost in the weeds. Everyone gets so many emails every single day. You guys know how it is. I can't keep up with deleting all the marketing stuff I get. And so if you're not consistently staying top of mind to them, they're going to forget about you. So I knew I couldn't just do it that way. I knew I needed an automation, that type of approach, because that's how I was going to stay top of mind. So what I did is I needed a place to send them, right? So I created a website. And you can do this super cheap. I was kind of naive and ignorant to it when I first started. And I used someone to help me create it. And if you don't have the resources to do that, don't do it. You can easily do it yourself. You can go on to Squarespace, which I use now. This is my second version of my website, or probably 2.5 or whatever. And I did it all myself. You can easily do that. Create a website. So you have a landing page to send people. It doesn't have to be too crazy. So if you go to greenbriercg.com, you can check ours out. Like I said, it doesn't have to be crazy. You just need a place to send people. And why are you sending them there? Because you're going to have something called a lead magnet. This is a marketing term. It's not fancy. It's just a term that marketers have come up with. Essentially what it is, it's something you're creating that has value that you can give them that then they will go and want to get it. And put in their name and contact information, right? So their name, email, maybe even a phone number. Then you have them in your list, right? The new gold is data, right? We've all heard that. And that's what this is. You're collecting data. You're collecting potential investors' data. And so that's what you want when you go, when you go on someone's podcast, when you're on your own podcast, when you go to meetups, you want to send them somewhere, not just increase your Rolodex in your cell phone. You want to be able to put them in a list that you can then use to market to them, potentially show future deals once you've developed that relationship, and just to stay top of mind. So when they're thinking of real estate investment, they're thinking of you. So what can you do for a lead magnet? There's a lot of things you can do for a lead magnet. It's about creating value that's related to what you do, right? And it's something that would be catchy to get them to actually want to download it. Like, I see a lot of like stock market versus real estate, those type of things, or how to create passive income through multifamily real estate, or how to retire early through multifamily real estate. And those are catchy, right? But I feel like they're kind of so overdone now, you need to stand out. But that's an example of a lead magnet. And the one that I get the most traffic on is probably one I've talked about before. And that's in the previous three-part series I did, which was how to increase your deal flow, how to get deal flow in 2022. And I have a resource where I go detailed step-by-step on what I do to build broker relationships, how to foster them, how to then get them to send you their best deals, how to close on those deals, and then how to continue to get even better and better deals from them, maintaining that relationship. And so what I do, I'm on this podcast, someone else's podcast, or at a mastermind, a meetup group, a conference, whatever it happens to be. If we get on that subject, I talk about it, say, give them a little taste of what I do, and then say, if you want more details, step-by-step action plan on how I've done it. And this is what you do. You text deal flow to 415-528-7403. Again, deal flow to 415-528-7403. And if they do that, it asks for their name and email. They put that in and they get an email to download the resource, right? And now I've collected their information. I'll be honest, I'm not type one to blast people, but this is what you do. You then take that information and you'd put it into your email campaign. Now, I don't have a robust one yet. I'm working on that, but I kind of battle myself because I don't like to blast people with emails, but I know it's a big part of this business, right? So maybe it's a monthly newsletter you put out, right? And then they get that every month, or they get your blogs you do, or update on, you know, new podcast episode that's out. It's so you can constantly stay top of mind. And then what I always do is there's always a link to schedule a call, right? Or to click on your invest with us button, right? So on my website, I also have an invest with us button where once you click on that, it goes to our portal on Syndication Pro. So it's our investor portal via Syndication Pro. No, I'm not sponsored by them. I don't get any money for saying that. Just who I use, and they're awesome. And they have a cool step process where you register to create an online account on the portal. And it asks, you know, obviously name, email, but also it asks, are you a credit investor or not? How much are you looking to invest? What type of investments have you done in the past? So you're already collecting that information, some of that information you need to develop a pre-existing substantial relationship. So that's great. And that's another reason why you need a landing page for them to go, right? And so the whole resource, like I do it in a text format, but I also put it on my website as a resource. So you can go to the website, put your name and email in, and then again, it'll be emailed to you. And this is the new age of doing it. It's creating an investor list. Again, the new gold is data. And this is the data you're collecting, name, email, phone number, potentially address, right? And the address is powerful because then you can send them hard copies of stuff. Like a lot of people don't do that anymore. And we've started to do that too, where we'll have these, for those watching, I'm sorry, I don't have any in front of me. I should have gotten them, but we'll have little postcards, right? And they'll be different themed, like your nest egg, like volatility erodes your portfolio. It'll have little pictures and then a short little description of what we're sending. And people like that because they don't get as much of that stuff anymore. And it just sets us apart. And then we'll also send a hard copy of our newsletter as well. Again, that's just another way to stay top of mind. And so when people think of real estate investment, they think of Sean and Greenbrier Capital Group. This whole thing is just to get people to give you their information. And that's why you need a platform to send them. Again, it's still important to go to all those virtual and in-person meetups. That's where you really foster relationships. But this other sleeve of how to do it is really important because it casts a wider net. You'll be able to scale that investor list a lot faster than if you did not do it. So these are kind of the main overarching ways on how to build your personal list. And personally, it's a double-edged sword, right? The personal list is the best way to raise money because it's your people, it's your investors. They're investing because of you. Like there's the saying that you may have heard that if you have a good deal, the money will come. Yes and no. I think it's really overused. If you have a track record, if people know you, if they know, like, and trust you and you have a good deal, yes, the money will come. But if this is your first deal, no one has heard of you other than your friends and family and you have a good deal, the money's not necessarily going to come because they don't know you. How are you going to market? And you, depending if you do a 506B or 506C, you may not even be able to market it. So how is that money going to come? People, yes, they want to invest in a good deal, but they're more investing in the operator, the person that's actually going to operate the deal. You could have the best deal in the world, get it at the best purchase price, best market, have the best upward mobility or best plan you could put in place. But if you're not a good operator and you can't operate that business plan, it doesn't matter. It's not going to work. It doesn't matter that you bought it at the best price or in the best market. It's not going to work. So investors invest with the operator. They got to know, like, and trust you. So that's why this is so important. That's why it's really powerful to raise money this way, because they're your investors. They're going to invest with you. They're going to trust you. You're going to bring them deals. And a good mentor of mine, or one of my first mentors in this business, is saying the money is in the money. And that's so true. What he meant by that, that's where the power is. The money's not in the real estate. The money is in the money. Because he or she who has that capital has a lot of power. There's people finding deals, but they're not necessarily have money, right? And there's people who have money, but don't have the deals, but they have the power to come to the person with the deal and be like, yeah, I got money, but like, this is what I need. This is what I'm looking for. The whole Don thing kind of. So the money's in the money. And that's why it's, in my opinion, this is the best way to raise the money is from your own investors, right? But I said it's a double-edged sword, because the other side of that, it's a lot of work. Not even just upfront, just constantly. Like, investor relations is huge, right? It's having great customer service, great investor relations, staying top of mind, not just in the beginning, but throughout your whole career. It's a lot of work, but it's very rewarding and it allows you to do more deals, especially more deals how you want to do them. So dependent on others and their capital stacks, it's yours. But again, it's a lot of work, but it's the best way to do it. In a perfect world, that's the only way I would want to raise money, right? But earlier on in people's careers, that's not necessarily the only way you're going to be able to do it, especially if you want to scale fast. You're going to have to bring on other partners, such as strategic partners, which we'll talk about next week, and maybe even some institutional partners. So I will leave it at that. I hope I touched on everything, and I hope that makes sense. But it's all about developing a platform to send people, right? A landing page, a landing spot to send people. Because you could have a great conversation with anyone. You could have the best podcast interview you've ever done. That doesn't matter if you don't have anywhere to send them, right? Forget about you in a day or two, in a couple hours. You need to have somewhere to send them so you can get that data and then stay top of mind. All right, guys. I hope this was a good one. Hope it was informative. Next week on part two, we'll talk about strategic partnerships. So these are people that are essentially doing what I was just talking about this whole episode, but they're probably further along than you. And, or even if they're at the same level as you, you can group a couple of them together to fulfill your whole raise. So that's what I know, a lot of people that do that. You build relationships with these other strategic partners that are capital raisers, and you go in and take down a deal together. So we'll talk about that next week. And if anyone is interested in what we do at Greenbrier, you can always check us out at greenbriercg.com. And if you ever want to see any type of deals we're doing, again, we mostly do 506Bs. So again, we got to develop that pre-existing substantive relationship. So to do that, go to our website, click on Invest with Us, fill out the quick form, and then we'll be in touch, set up a call. And then maybe in the future, we can show you some cool deals. All right, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. Have a great week, and I'll catch you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is an investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review, and of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.